From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in a college classroom. Imagine you were taking a college course right now in this manic election season, and that class was titled Elections and Voting in America. What would you expect to learn? That class is on offer at Hobart and William Smith, and one of the co-teachers is the president of the colleges, Mark Guerin. And Guerin has a long resume in American politics and education. It's worth reading just to give you a sense of who is helping lead this class. I'll try to do it quickly. Guerin was vice presidential campaign manager for Clinton Gore in 92. When the Clinton Gore ticket won, he served in a variety of roles: White House communications director, White House deputy chief of staff, executive director of the Democratic Governors Association. And then in 1995, President Bill Clinton appointed Guerin as the 14th director of the Peace Corps. Guerin served as vice chair of the National Commission on Military, National, and Public Service, created by Congress. He is a past chair of the board of directors of both National Campus Compact and the Corporation for National and Community Service. In 2018, he was appointed director of the Institute of Politics at the Harvard Kennedy School. I share the resume because I'm genuinely curious how Mark Guerin would approach teaching a class on American elections now. His own work has at times been very partisan, and at times it has been not meant to be partisan at all. The current electoral climate feels charged and tense. So what are his students learning? What are they thinking about? Fortunately for Guerin, he doesn't have to teach this class alone. HWS professor of politics Dwayne Lucas is working alongside him, and we've asked both of them to join us this hour. They are doing that from WEOS, Finger Lakes Public Radio, and it is great to have Mark Guerin, president of Hobart and William Smith Colleges, back on the program with us. Thanks for making the time, Mark.
Evan, it's always good to be with you. Thank you for having us.
Dwayne Lucas, associate professor of politics, chair of the politics department at HWS, co-teaching this class. Professor Lucas, great to have you. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me as well.
And welcome to Will Jones from the class of 26, a politics major and someone who can tell us a little bit about that student perspective. Hey, Will, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Mark, let me start with you. Your time's a little shorter, and I just want to start by asking, you know, you're a veteran of campaigns, and you've probably seen a lot that those of us who aren't on the inside haven't seen. But have you ever seen a campaign like this, and does this feel different to you?
What a great question to start us with, Evan. And the answer is yes, it does feel different. And it's not just my reaction in talking to friends on both campaigns and strategists. I think we're all witnessing something that is just unprecedented in that it is that close. It is these razor-thin margins in battleground states. So it is a time in our class that Professor Lucas and I teach where all the more reason why we go at these issues and unpack different policy positions, the strategies behind each campaign. And I just wish your listeners could join us in class because you would be very, very impressed with our students whose political views span the range, as you would hope, but whose ability to talk across difference and wrestle with these issues is really, in my judgment, exemplary.
Mark, I don't think it is healthy when an election feels existential, that the stakes are so high. And of course the stakes are high in any presidential election for the most powerful country in the world. They should be high. They will be high.
Right.
But it has, and I don't want to be... I don't want to be naive. I don't want to be Pollyanna. I understand that my own life has been relatively insulated from a lot of possible harm. But I just can't get past the idea that so many voters have been told that, you know, that this country is on a glide path to doom, that we're entering a Great Depression, Trump said the other day, even though all the economic indicators, not all of them, but many, are in such good directions. Crime is down. Crime's lower than it was in 2019, pre-pandemic. You wouldn't know that based on what you hear on the campaign trail. And people are just told that we are in this dark, dystopic society, and they have really come to believe it. And I don't know what to do with that. It doesn't feel like that we are in a healthy moment, and I don't know how to emerge from a moment like that.
Right. No, I'm not in disagreement of your analysis of our current civic life. I do, though, take inspiration and optimism from this generation of students who, in fairness, have an even more of a burden because, respectfully to most of us, they have more of their lives ahead of them than we do, right? But to be confronted daily and incessantly with the kind of extreme language. And I'm not just making this on a partisan level, but in many cases. And there are real world issues from climate to income insecurity to food security, very significant issues. But it's also an awfully interesting time to be 20 years old. And my hope is that with the kind of outside speakers we've brought in across the political spectrum, with readings and assignments and reflections that Professor Lucas has thoughtfully organized, our students can measure that out in terms of a sense of history, in terms of a sense of the actual structure of our government and political infrastructure, to take some confidence in that, hopefully, but also some inspiration moving forward. Our student here, Will, is thinking himself of a career in the military. So he has reflected on that previously. We're about to elect the commander-in-chief, a term we kind of loosely reference for those of us not in the military. But for him and others, it is a very real and defining role that will affect his life and perhaps his military service in real ways. So that brings kind of clarity to it. I think our class brings, for me, inspiration for it. But I totally take your point. It is, there's far more to be encouraged about in these moments than so much of the pervasive commentary and political culture.
Professor Lucas, do you share some optimism there?
I think I share a lot of optimism about this generation, and I think what they've seen is a country that they, while they love it, they have a lot of concerns about its future. And I think thinking about how to process the issues that are facing us today and that's going to face us tomorrow weighs on their minds probably far more heavily than it weighed on my mind when I was in college. I think they think long term in ways that current generations or past generations did not think. But I also think, and I see from them, they want to do better than we've done. They want to have conversations across the aisle from Democrats, Republicans, Independents. They want to find ways of solving big issues that are before us, whether it's the economy, whether it's reproductive rights, whether it's international affairs. And they want to do so in a collective manner. And one of the things our class has done, I think, has given them a forum for those type of conversations and to model the ability to talk to someone who you know disagrees with you on 95% of issues, but you could talk about that 5%.
Well, Will Jones is part of the class of 26 at HWS. What is the central emotional feeling right now on the eve of election 2024? What are you sort of most governed by emotionally right now?
I get the sense that everybody's kind of holding their breath a little bit, just kind of waiting to see what happens. This is, you know, personally, you know, from the people I talk to, mostly the first election that we've ever been able to actively participate in and vote in. So having, you know, a little bit more skin in the game, a little bit more stake, I think is exciting for a lot of students here and a lot of the people I talk to, but also a little bit, you know, scary in a sense. So cautiously optimistic, and I think the general sense around campus, we're just holding our breath, waiting for the results to come in.
We're going
to
talk a lot this hour with Will about what he is learning in this class and also how he is perceiving this election as a college student right now. President Guerin, let me just ask you a little bit here. And you are too savvy a person to allow me to extract some serious tea, as Will's generation would say, and what the Clintons might be saying. I wonder when the last time you talked to Hillary Clinton or Bill Clinton is, and if there's anything you can share about how that circle is looking at this election season and feeling.
Yeah, well, I'm out of the business of being their spokesperson, as you know, my day job. Evan.
Yes, indeed.
But I did see President Clinton recently. I serve on his Clinton School of Public Service for the at the University of Arkansas, and we met at the Clinton Foundation. And so I did meet with him, and it was before he was going to campaign in Georgia and North Carolina. And I think he, like many of us, are putting together a factual scenario that, in his judgment, could elect Vice President Harris. He did observe the challenges ahead and the kind of complexities. And obviously, he's well attuned to what it's like to run against President Trump with Secretary Clinton's campaign. But at that point, He saw Absolute Pathways. That was probably 3 weeks ago or so, 3 or 4 weeks ago. So, you know, it's, someone asked me, you know, are you optimistic for democracy? There's, and I recall the great reflection of former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright when she was asked a similar kind of question. She said, I'm an optimist who worries a lot, right? Mm-hmm. You can be both, right? And that's how I think people going into this. We all know that it is without precedent, and so how close it is. We had John King here for the President's Forum series, and he spoke to that question that when you really get down to the number of contestable voters in a small number of states for a country of 340 million people or whatever, it's astonishingly small number, right? But our hope in this class and in discourse on campus through the President's Forum to bring in different people. And that has been kind of my experience growing up as an undergraduate. My own college roommate was the president of the Republican Club, yep, and kind of a conservative columnist and talk show host. So that discourse is important. It is hard. It is hard for all of us, I think, as whether we're in class, out of class, with family and friends in these very highly polarized times. But in a small liberal arts institution, at a place that prizes that, that's the mission, and that's what we're trying to accomplish in this class and the kind of forum guests that we've had. So when you go from a Hugh Hewitt to Latosha Brown, who started Black Voters Matter, you get a range of things, and then measured by reflections of a journalist like John King from CNN or Amy Walter from the Cook Political Report, really seeing the kind of discourse. And look, we're a college. We are lifelong learners, and we can all learn from a lot of perspectives.
Well, and you know, you mentioned Hugh Hewitt. That was your college roommate, right?
That's correct.
So, okay.
He's in the news a little bit.
In the news. I'm not going to ask you to speak for Hugh. Yeah. I share a lot in Hugh, and that we're both Cleveland sports fans.
There you go. That's a bond.
What I think I am most surprised at is Hugh Hewitt, who, for listeners who are not familiar, has been a very successful conservative radio host and writer for a number of years. And he asks a lot of his guests questions about their views on everything from the nuclear triad to foreign policy. He's very, 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 very invested in making sure that, you know, the United States has wise and strong foreign policy. And, you know, when General Mark Kelly, who has never been a political actor, 45 years in the Marine Corps, entered in 1970, rose through the ranks, one of the most respected American generals, served Donald Trump as a small-C conservative that John Kelly has said that he's been his whole life, not a big political animal. But when he comes out a month before an election and says, I cannot stay silent, that Mark Milley, General Milley, cannot stay silent. Do you ever call your old college roommate and say, how do you throw them under the bus? I get that you don't like AOC and Nancy Pelosi, but Generals Kelly and Milley?
Yeah.
What does Hugh Hewitt say to that?
No, it's interesting because I posed that question to Scott Jennings, the Republican strategist of CNN, because it is noteworthy to me. And one of the critiques of some friends of the Harris campaign is that perhaps this isn't coming through enough. You get his former vice president, his national security advisor, members of his cabinet who are not supporting him, right? It's the significant numbers of the Trump administration. And how can that be? What is that saying from those who are closest into him? Scott, in the forum, I don't know, Dwayne, if your recollection is any different mind, kind of dismisses it that those people he would not hire again. And it's just, you move right through it, which is a challenge that Democrats have had with President Trump's campaign on many different issues, his ability to seemingly barrel through these topics and challenges that many Democrats have to do it.
Well, let's move on because you can't speak for Hugh Hewitt. You're only your own spokesperson, and Mark's time's limited. I want to ask the professors, and I'll start with Mark on this, a question about how this class is being taught. Listeners, we're talking about Politics 221, Elections and Voting in America. You cannot take that class unless you go to Hobart and William Smith Colleges, and that's where it's being taught by Dwayne Lucas and Mark Guerin. Mark is the president of Hobart and William Smith. And Dwayne Lucas is chair of the Department of Politics there. They're with us from our WEOS studios at Finger Lakes Public Radio in Geneva. Will Jones from the class of 2026 is also with them talking about his experiences from the student perspective. So, again, I'll start with Mark here. Your charge in teaching a class like this has some similarity to the charge that I have in hosting this program, in that there is I think, a responsibility not to try to overly inflect personal politics into, for you, teaching, for me, conversation, facilitation of community discussion. Although I have been clear from the outset of this recent Trump era that I don't think that that's the same, that I grew up in a small C conservative household, that I don't think that what we have seen for much of the last 10 years looks like that. And when we have January 6th and the generals who worked for him warning about, you know, just subversion of basic democratic norms, to say nothing of shooting protesters and using the military as a personal army, then I think that we are in a different place. And I have said so, but that doesn't mean that I don't respect everyone who votes, no matter how you vote, that I respect all neighbors, community members, Americans, and that's not just trite. I do. I think people get to their place of political support in very honest ways to them. And it may not look like yours or mine, but I want to understand that. And I think we should keep talking about that in ways that are respectful and kind and productive and constructive. When you are teaching, probably the expectation is you're not going to put your thumb too much on the scales of what you choose to teach about or what you feature and what you don't. But again, we're in a little bit of a different time. So, Mark, you want to start? You want to take us through how you teach a class that you could say to students, you could say to their families, we're not just here, you know, we're not going to try to influence you overly. We're trying to help you be educated so you can be, you know, your own citizen.
Right. Well, I would say you do provide, with all candor, Evan, a good model of the kind of discourse that can happen. Your show is so well regarded because of that very ethos that you bring to it. Your own preparation is evident in the kind of guests you bring on. So to be likened to that is a compliment to us, because I've appreciated what you do here for this region. For this course, Dwayne and I have taught it before a few cycles, right? So that's the good news. In less kind of polarized times, in less kind of heightened times. So we have, I think, benefited from that history, and it's a real honor for me to teach with him. For me, and it does go back to kind of my own college experience and kind of the importance of talking across that difference. Will can speak to this, but it's a very different time, right? Polarized across every demographic, but for young people as well. And that is concerning. And for me, I think for our democracy, for our civic life, no matter how you come out on this, the ability in spaces like this and the privilege we have on a small campus to engage across difference is critical, and to develop the kind of empathic listening skills. And I think particularly for partisans, I saw this when I was at Harvard at the Institute of Politics, also to be challenged with your ideas, to kind of live in a vacuum while comfortable, and to live in your own echo chamber media-wise while comfortable, I get it, doesn't particularly breed or enhance the rigorous thought and analysis that a liberal arts education can provide. So it can lead, candidly, to flabby thinking from partisans, unless challenged. So our hope in the class, guided by readings and reflections and the coursework as well, is to situate the current events threaded through the readings and other topics. I must say, the course that we put together in the spring, and the Professor Lucas really charted out in such a good way in the spring, I wrote to him after Vice President Harris entered the race with President Biden dropping out, and I sent him an email in the summer saying, our very interesting course just got more interesting. And indeed, that's the case, because this has been a 100-day or so campaign that's literally unprecedented in this kind of scope and kind of nature. So there's so many things different about this, exciting. If you add in the House and Senate races, it all adds to a pretty monumental time. But to be living in these times is, for those of us who really are drawn to the politics of it, in addition to the public policy, very, very exciting. So to transmit that love of politics at its best, and to bring in guests who can span the political divides, we brought in graduates who've worked are working in the Trump campaign or for the RNC or for one of the most progressive members of the House, Congressman Jim McGovern. Different voices mixing it up. We'll have the director of the Institute of Politics at American University tomorrow. So voices that can animate the conversation and bring a broader lens. Candidly, I don't know how you feel, Duane, but my own politics, I don't think it's a secret to anyone, but candidly, it's not the point, right? What my politics are. It's not that interesting, really.
Yes.
Right? It's really, where are we all going forward? What are the views? Can we can learn from one another and disagree with one another? And there's a lot of that, as there should be.
Duane, go ahead, Duane.
Okay. So, no, I was just going to add, sort of my approach has always been, in all my classes, I'm not trying to create many Duane Lucases. There's, the world can only handle one of us at a time, so there's no point in creating others. But what I am trying to do is help my students to get from where they are to where I would love for them to be when they graduate. And that's someone that can engage with different people who think differently about politics to read different sources of information, evaluate those sources, and come up with clear, reasonable arguments and perspectives on those sources and how to use them in your day-to-day life. And that's one of the things I think we've been doing a great job with in our class this year. We have 44 students, about a third from the sophomore class, the junior class, and the senior class. There was an application to get into it just to make sure we were pulling people who are really interested in the topic. And we did that so that we can be sure that we have students who are going to have a conversation. And even on the bad days, and the bad days are when people want to yell at one another, we're having conversation across the aisles and people are hearing different perspectives.
Well, I want to take this opportunity to let the president of HWS go, because I know his schedule is very busy. And in our second half hour, we're going to dive into more of what this class is teaching students and what Will is taking from it, and maybe where we go from here. But I want to thank Mark Guerin, president of Hobart and William Smith Colleges, who is co-teaching Politics 221, Elections and Voting in America. Thank you for making time. We'll talk to you on the other side one way or another, Mark. Thank you very much.
Evan. We should get you to beam into our class sometime. You'd be a great guest.
I'll tell you what, anytime you want to do that, I would love to talk to students.
You're on the record. It's going to happen. Thank you for having me.
That's Mark Guerin joining us from WEOS, Finger Lakes Public Radio, 89.5 FM. I hope listeners, wherever you are listening on the various platforms, WEOS all throughout the Finger Lakes, WXXI, the WXXI mobile app. Lots of different ways to listen. Let's take this only break of the hour. And when we come back, Professor Lucas and Will Jones from the class of 2026 at HWS, we're gonna kind of talk a little bit more about how you teach elections and voting in America at this time where everything feels so fragile, and how a student like Will is looking forward and how you kind of take this in your first major national election. So a lot to come. We'll come right back on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, the co-founders of a new piece of election technology. It's called BallotWise. They're joining us to talk about how they are trying to help voters, how they're trying to help undecided voters, not just in a presidential campaign, but in every race on your ballot. Are you familiar with the candidates, with their records, their voting records when they've been in office, their positions on the issues? We'll talk about the new tool called BallotWise next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. You've been hearing from the chair of the Department of Politics at Hobart and William Smith Colleges, Professor Duane Lucas, who is with us from WEOS, and Will Jones in the class of 2026. He's a politics major. So, Will, I wonder if that means that, you're more engaged than your peers just because of your educational and possible career path. How engaged are your peers in this election?
I would say more engaged than what most people would think. I think, the general, theme or consensus as I hear on the news is, young people aren't as politically active or don't get out and vote as in big numbers as they should. And I think that I'm seeing a big contrast to that here. I'm having conversations with people who aren't politics majors, particularly on the baseball team that I'm a part of here, about politics and, what they think about certain issues and policy conversations and candidates and, all the way, things ranging from, serious talks about different policy issues to, the funny gaffe that happened that they saw on TikTok. A wide range of different talks about politics. And I think that what you're going to see in this election is a big showing from the young group.
Well, so that's a pretty significant prediction, Will, as you know, because typically your age cohort votes in smaller numbers. And right now, the reason I think we're going into tomorrow, where no one really knows anything on what's going to happen, especially in those seven swing states, is because, you know, if your demographic votes in bigger numbers than ever before, it probably is decisive. If your demographic votes in numbers that are typical, it's going to be much harder if you're rooting for the Democrats. It's going to be much better if you're rooting for the Republican in this race. And I'm not going to do a whole hour of polls. We're going to talk a little bit more about understanding exit polling and data tomorrow, so we're all a little bit better prepared for tomorrow night. But the final Emerson polls, pretty good pollster, as far as I know, has Trump up 2 in Arizona and Harris up 2 in Michigan, and everything else is either a tie or less than one point. I mean, it's so close. And does it occur to you, Will, that, you know, this idea that young people don't vote, if you guys voted, depending on the outcome you want, you could swing it. I mean, does that come into your mind?
Yes, I think it really started to come into my mind through this class. We did, I was in charge of running 12 community engagement projects that spanned, you know, the semester up until now, leading up until the election. Basically, you know, the students organized anything between a discussion on particular policy issues, talking about having forums with different professors and a wide range of different talks and civic engagement projects for voters and, you know, across the board. And I think that through that, I think myself and the students have realized that you really can make a difference in this election. You can push people to you know, mobilize them to vote and educate them on certain politicians or policy issues or, you know, any of that range of stuff. And I think that from the class has been my biggest takeaway is that, you know, we do have the power to be able to change an election that is national, that is a big scale. And I think that's been the most rewarding experience of the class so far.
Will, it would not be fair to ask you, you know, what issues are big to young people, as if you are the spokesperson for all, you know, 20-somethings. That is not fair. I will ask you if there are two or three that stand out in sort of your peer group of issues that are going to drive young voters.
Yeah, I think the two biggest that we've talked about in class have been the economy and reproductive rights. I think that those are, you know, two very big issues that I find that we consistently come back to in conversations and discussions in our class. So I think that those will definitely be two of the more important ones when it comes to our to the young group.
Yeah, and reproductive health is a little more straightforward. The economy a little more broad. So when you say the economy, be a little bit more specific and take me through, you know, how you are perceiving a political campaign, the effect of national politics on the economy.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we've had a wide range of discussions on, you know, how much the president actually affects the economy, where, you know, that leads, wide range of opinions on what's, you know, important from the economy. I think, you know, people are looking at it as, you know, they're going out of college, like, what's next? They're entering the real world. How are they going to be able to integrate into the real world, you know, as easily as possible from an economic standpoint? So I think that you know, is their concern. They're trying to figure out, you know, what they can do to set themselves up, you know, the best for the future through their vote.
Well, let me ask Professor Lucas then. Dwayne Lucas is Associate Professor of Politics and Chair of the Politics Department at HWS, who is co-teaching Elections and Voting in America. What do you hope students emerge from this class, especially now, you know, with we're on election eve. We're going to get to the other side. We're getting to Wednesday one way or another as a country. But what do you hope that they emerge from this class better understanding, Professor?
My big goal is for them to do a better job or leave with a better perspective of the other side. Part of my research since I've been at HWS has been about polarization, how the parties are moving far and far apart. And back in, I think it was early 2008, 2010, I worked for Charles Sprengel as a congressional fellow in his office and had a conversation with him in which I asked him what did he think was the biggest reason for the parties moving apart. And his answer was very simple. We don't talk anymore. And he was talking, one, about we don't talk as members of Congress to people on the other side as we used to do, and we also don't talk today with people on the other side the way we used to do it. And so one of my goals for this class was to give a platform for different ideas and to allow Republican conservative students to speak up alongside liberal and Democratic students, and to also serve the ground of when things aren't being said, to say them myself, and to sort of give the full-hearted Trump supporter Republican voice in the room, if I have to be that person, but to also be to give the Harris supporter voice in that room, because I want students to hear both sides, because too many times we get lost in these echo chambers and we think that's the only way to think, and that's part of the problem. The challenge for this country today is that there's not one way to think, and there's not one way that people see things. There's multiple ways, and until we start hearing from the other side, we won't find any solutions. So that's my big goal for the class.
I admire that, Professor. I think that is absolutely vital. I think, and I want to hear from Will on his media sources here. I think part of the challenge now, I was talking with a friend the other day about, like, how did we get to where everything seems so siloed and it's so hard to have shared ideas of what is real and what is not. We have I'm not breaking any new ground here, but I don't think we fully appreciated what it means to have a fully fragmented media where you can confirm your biases and never really experience other ideas. So if we were talking about immigration in past years, which we've been talking about immigration, of course, since time immemorial here, you could talk about strain on the system. You could talk about what is, you know, a reasonable annual goal, what's healthy, what is not sustainable, you know, what should deportation look like or not? Is the asylum process working? Is it not? Instead, here's an example. President Trump today at a rally said, they do not speak a word of English in Springfield, Ohio anymore. This isn't what this country is about. We had a beautiful little town in Springfield, Ohio, and now it is horrible. Horrible. You have Republican CEOs of industries in Springfield who say that the Haitian workers are among the best that they have. The churches are full again, and that it's not perfect. The system needs help. It's not perfect. But that's a whole different thing when you say, well, you know, it's horrible. You know, Springfield's going to hell. No one speaks English. It's not connected to reality. But a lot of the listeners of this program will not have heard that from Trump because they're, you know, we're in different media silos and ecosystems. And the ones that do hear that all the time, over and over and over again. So, you know, it's like we have these different experiences of reality within the same towns and states and country now. And we can just pick and choose where we are with the what platforms we're listening to. Will Jones, how old are you, Will, if I can ask?
21.
21. So take me through a typical day or a week of news consumption. What are your sources?
Yeah, so I try.
You don't have to try to impress me, by the way.
No, I keep it pretty simple. I try and stay away from trying to get my news sources from, you know, the TikTok, Instagram reel world, which, you know, I know. You know, talking to people, you know, my age that, you know, that can, you know, sometimes be a significant news source. But I try and I stick to, you know, mostly Politico, Real Cool Politics, 538, stick to those basic sources for election news.
Okay. And again, you can't speak for an entire generation, but typically, if you had to do your best description of where people your age are getting news from, how would you describe it?
I think it depends on how politically involved you are. I think the people in the class are very, very politically involved naturally. So we do weekly article selections. So the students select articles that they found that they are interested in, really into politics, and they want to write about. So I've seen, you know, a lot of them are from, you know, anywhere from CNN to NBC to Politico for their sources. I think, you know, talking to you know, people not as politically involved. I do see, you know, when I have conversations with them, I do try and, you know, try and steer them out of the, you know, fast, you know, quick soundbite, you know, social media news sources, you know, through TikTok and Instagram and stuff like that. But I think that, you know, some do get it from those places as well.
What are the popular is there a podcast rotation that you listen to?
Not necessarily news wise. 538 is usually the one that I go to, NPR, occasionally.
Okay.
But I think, you know, from what I'm hearing, a lot of people are, you know, particularly from where I'm from, my hometown, are big on Joe Rogan, the Sean Ryan show. Those are the top two podcasts in America. They tune in often a lot to listen to those. You know, particularly, you know, when they have big names on, you know, like former President Trump and J.D. Vance as recently. But I think most of the time, students are getting their news sources from other sources.
Okay. Yeah. I was going to ask you about Joe Rogan and Sean Ryan. Here's another name I'm curious to know if he has any influence among people your age. Andrew Tate.
I don't really think as much as people make it out to be. I think that maybe in the beginning, but you know, his message has kind of gone, I think, a little stale. I think his you know, big boost in popularity is gone, and I think it's kind of simmering out. I mean, I obviously can't speak for everybody, but I'm seeing him less and less on my social media feed, and in that type of news realm. So I don't think he's as prominent as he used to be.
Now, Professor Lucas, when you've got students in class who want to, you know, discuss, debate, share ideas, I think the challenge that we are in now, that probably isn't going to change for the better, is that you may have a student, you may have an American citizen in your coffee shop, you may have a coworker who has this idea of how the world is, and that is entirely flipped from where your perspective or your understanding is, and that's because we've just been chowing down on very different media. And how do you kind of square that up and find that shared idea of reality?
I tend to want to hear them out first and sort of like ask them, where did you get that from? I think Will will agree. There's been multiple times I've said, like, is that a TikTok? Is that an Instagram post that you're reading from, as opposed to the Washington Post or some other source? And they generally give a honest response. And I said, so that's great. So where did that story come from? How do we engage in that story, have a serious conversation about that? And sometimes I will say, because what I read is the opposite of what you read, or for this class in particular, what we've been able to do, we have a fair mix of students. Students react immediately. If you say you got this information from Joe Rogan, someone else comes back, well, in the Washington Post, this is what they're actually seeing. Or in New York Times, this is what they're seeing. And so that gives I get two different sources of information. Then we could talk about those sources. Why is Rogan saying one thing where the New York Times and Washington Post are totally different? What are their different takes? And why do those different takes lead to different conclusions? I think Will will also agree. I think one of our most controversial classes was when we had a discussion about immigration. And part of me, what made that so interesting is that people were, one, sharing the same sources of information. They all saw the same videos about cats and dogs, but no one had actual information, real life, or at least they didn't think they did. And so, but when you push people, you ask them, so I turn to a student and say, what's your experience with this? You're from California. What was that like? Or you're from Texas, or you're from Connecticut. What are your experiences with immigration as an actual policy issue? How do you understand? And people sort of start articulating the party line or the talking points and say, no, we can't have this. This is not the place for this. This isn't a White House press room. This is our classroom. What's your actually take on it? How many immigrants have you met that are like that? How do you see these immigration policies affecting your towns and communities? Are there less jobs, more jobs? Do you feel safer there? Do you feel less safe? And if so, why? And if these are the challenges, how do we as a collective come up with a decision to move us forward?
Talking to Professor Dwayne Lucas from Hobart and William Smith Colleges. He's the chair of the Department of Politics, and he co-teaches Politics 221, Elections and Voting in America. And this is our look inside the classroom to not only what is being taught, but how students are taking that news. Will Jones is a student. And, you know, Will, right now, how do you feel about the health of our voting, I was going to say system, democracy? I guess maybe the professor would say, careful, we're a republic. But I'll just ask you the small d. How do you feel about the health of the democracy right now, Will?
Little uneasy, I think, you know, seeing, you know, in the news, you know, how it goes. Like I was in class the other day and, you know, someone was on their computer right before class started and was like, oh my God, they're burning, you know, ballot boxes, you know, in Oregon and different states. And you see that stuff and you've never heard about it happening before and you have no historical reference on it. And, you know, from what we understand. And so you're kind of holding your breath, like I said earlier, like wondering, you know, what exactly is going to happen? You know, how are people going to take the election once the results are in and, you know, how things are going to go. But I think having the discussions in class and seeing how the vice presidential debate went, you know, those are things that, you know, do offer us hope. I think that continuing to have those conversations with the civic engagement projects, talking to people, you know, from both sides of the aisle and what they do and why they believe what they believe, and giving a face to, you know, particular policy opinions, not just, you know, what you're seeing on social media and the TV has been, you know, giving me some hope recently that, you know, politics can steer into a direction of more bipartisanship and working together going forwards.
You're a politics major, Will?
Yes.
Why do you want to work in politics?
President Geeran said earlier, I'm pursuing a career in the military with the Marine Corps. So,
by the way, that's great stuff. Thank you for doing that.
I appreciate it. Thank you. Haven't done anything fully yet though. So don't thank me yet. But, I think my interest in politics really has come through, you know, my interest in the military. That's something I always knew that I wanted to do. And I think, you know, through that, there's very, you know, big interconnectedness between the two, particularly with, you know, foreign policy and how that relates to, you know, decisions made with the military. So that's how my interest, you know, first stemmed from it. And once, you know, I got into it more, I just found that, you know, things outside of, you know, the foreign policy stuff, you know, really interested me. And, you know, how to get people to work together, that bipartisanship within Congress, like how stuff like that works, I think has been stuff that, you know, I've really, really enjoyed learning about.
Question from Andrew, a listener, wants to know, how do your guests describe, and I presume in the classroom, how do you describe January 6th? I'm actually going to start with a student. So, Will, you were 17, maybe 18, when January 6th happened. Is that right? I'm trying to do the math on
yes.
your age.
Yep.
What did you make of it at the time, and what do you think of it now?
I remember I was with, you know, some of my buddies from home. We were at the gym, and we started, you know, get notifications and pop-ups on our feed, you know, about, you know, January 6th. And it was kind of, you know, like a, you know, holy crap moment, you know, like this, we were like, you know, kind of realizing that this is, you know, like this is really another historic event, you know, that we're living through. You know, and it was a little scary. We weren't exactly sure, you know, what was going on. You know, it was very difficult. You know, there was so much information, misinformation at the time. You know, I think that was, you know, big thing. Everybody, you know, my friends on the right, my friends on the left, you know, talking about it, you know, no one really, you know, fully could grasp, in, you know, in the moment, you know, what was going on.
Well, let's ask the professor. So, Professor Lucas, how do you address teaching on elections and voting in America after a January 6th has happened? And what's the right way to describe what happened that day?
So we haven't done a lot in this class about January 6th. It's come up as a subject, as a topic, but we haven't had a huge conversation. I think I cover it more in my political parties and my intro to American politics classes when I want to talk about sort of the change that's going on in our political system. In addition, one of the things that Trump brings to the political table is that he brings a new type of politics. And some, I like to call it, refer to, we may be on the cusp of a realignment in American political systems and political parties and how they position themselves on the big issues, how we think about their role in government, how we think about what the system, how the system will behave. And January 6th is a symptom, an example of that transition, and that we now have a politician, a presidential candidate, a former president, and a presidential candidate who part of his message is emboldening people who have felt that the system has abandoned them. And that they don't have a stake in the system. And part of his abandonment has been that we need to fight back, fight against the system. And how, in part, in as we process this, because January 6th, the Trumpism, the role of Trump in our political system isn't going to change after Tuesday. It definitely won't change after January 20th. What will happen is we're going to have to wrestle with those issues. What was the push for Americans to go to the Capitol and express their anger, their disappointment with the system in the way they expressed it? How do those that do not share that same level of frustration deal, reconcile with their neighbors who did feel that the system was so disadvantaged and so disadvantaged them that they had to take steps that they took on January 6th. And we have to approach that as a conversation. It is not once it is, some of us will think one side is right, the other side is wrong, but it's not that simple in many cases. Someone who feels frustrated by the system, or people who felt frustrated by the system, took to the streets on January 6th for a reason. Those that did not feel frustrated didn't take to the streets. And if we're going to think about our future, we need to figure out how we're going to resolve that. How do we have a conversation with people who were emboldened by January 6th, by the events of January 6th, versus those that weren't?
Professor, I want to share an idea that, sure, I want you to tell me in your class how this, well, it seems like a very open forum, and I mm-hmm. applaud you for that. But I want to share an idea that if I share this in your class, how would you receive this idea? This is not my own idea.
Okay.
But it says that the longer a country goes, a country that is in many ways a small d democracy, the longer it goes without existential threat, a world war, an invasion, some sort of absolute possible catastrophe, the longer it goes without that, citizens will need something to struggle against and will be susceptible to being convinced that their country, imperfect but strong, is falling apart from within or is threatened by a cabal of bad actors, and that they must invest in some rising Christ-like figure, or they turn on each other as opposed to seeing it as the imperfect but strong and growing union that it is. And that we are now at that point in this country where, you know, in essential peacetime, or at least without existential threat for a long time, we have invented threats to create a sense of shared struggle. What do you think?
Well, I think I agree with the struggle part. I think a system, a society needs something to work towards or work against. I don't know if that necessarily means we lead to this, that leads to the dissension, the disconnect that we see in our current system. I think our current system is defined by a different set of challenges. And those challenges, I'm going to be a broken work record here, those challenges are us not speaking to the other side and hearing common issues, mm-hmm. but those challenges are also climate related, they're economy related, they're immigration related. There are a number of factors that have been with us as a country for the last 200 years, and we're going to continue to wrestle with those questions. Does that make us all disconnected in itself? I think I would definitely push back on that in the classroom, and I would maybe this becomes a major topic paper in the class for us to have a focused conversation around. But I don't know if I will buy right off that this is going to lead us to a point where we're going to be fighting against one another.
Well,
but,
I want to take your class. I love this. I think you're doing it. I appreciate it. And again, I'm getting a little more calm from you. Thank you for that.
Again, as President Guerin said, you're welcome to come Zoom in or take the class one day, Tuesday, Thursdays.
Tuesday, Thursday, see? Get more people. All right. Will, we're under our last minute here. Would you describe yourself right now as an optimist or a pessimist about your own future and the future of your country?
I'm an optimist, I think. Really talking to people, you know, at the colleges and having those conversations with, you know, people on both sides of the aisle, from class, outside of class, you know, from the baseball to, you know, my friends, you know, working towards the military perspective. I've heard, you know, a lot of differing opinions, and, you know, everybody is, you know, politically engaged and wanting this country to go to a better place. And why they might have different ways they see of doing it, I think at the end of the day that everybody's heart is in it, you know, for the right reasons from the people I've talked to. And, you know, I think that as our generation continues to get older and to influence more people, I'm excited to see what they do.
Hey, Will, good luck to you. Thank you for sharing your wisdom with us. You are giving me a sense of calm that I needed on this Monday. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's Will Jones from the class of 26 at Hobart and William Smith, and Professor Dwayne Lucas, who is the chair of politics at HWS. Thank you for the insight. We really appreciate spending this hour with you, Professor. And our thanks to Mark Guerin, president of the colleges, who joined us in the first half hour. We've got more connections coming up in just a moment.